Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer Sports Radio 810 WHB. And boy, do we have a special one for you today. Nate Buchady with you as always, joined by Carter Augustine. We are coming to you from Children's Mercy Park, where tomorrow this place is going to be absolutely alive with the final game of Group D, and the United States men's national team will cap off the doubleheader tomorrow night with a chance to win the group as they take on CONCACAF rival Panama. Coming up on the show, we're going to hear from former U.S. Men's National Team member Benny Failhaber, who got to say hi to some old friends who were in town sharing the Pinnacle Training Complex with him today. We'll talk about the national team with him. We'll talk about Sporting Kansas City's big road win at Columbus on Sunday, and, of course, their big game coming up on Saturday in Salt Lake City as well. But right now, I mean, boom, right out of the chute, we got a U.S. Men's National Team member joining us here at Children's Mercy Park. Defender Tim Ream is with us. Tim, thanks a lot for joining us. How are you, man?
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys. I'm very good.
And so you guys just got done with your news conference here. You answered some questions there. Now you get to answer some questions for us. So, Carter, I guess you and I have to come up with something different to talk about with Tim.
Going to grill him.
Yeah.
Perfect. I'm ready.
our first question, we here in Kansas City are pretty excited about the facility here, of course, but also the brand-new Pinnacle training facility across the highway. You guys have had the ownership of that for the last couple of days. Tell me your perspective on the digs here. What do you think?
Wow. Yeah, I think that was the very first reaction from not just myself, but all the guys, coaching staff, training staff, right down to the photography and the press guys. It's an impressive facility. With the recovery aspects, the pools, the gym, all the fields, the waiting area up top, and the different meeting rooms. It's one of a kind.
So you guys got a chance to train there a couple of days. Now you get ready for this game tomorrow, and I'm curious just kind of what your thoughts are after having a couple of games under your belts that actually matter. I mean, it's been, I think all of us as U.S. soccer, right, we've been waiting for some games that matter for a couple of years now. How do you feel about the way those have gone and going into tomorrow night?
Yeah, I think, listen, with the way the last year and a half has gone, with games that have just kind of been there, that's kind of the feeling that I've mm-hmm. had, is that they're just there. They don't mean much. You can run out, you know, a few of the young guys who may have a future in the program, but man, to play real competitive, meaningful games has been nice. I think personally, I speak for the team when I say that the first game, there's a little bit of nerves there. You want to get off to a good start in any kind of tournament, especially in the Gold Cup against an opponent like Guyana. And while it wasn't perfect, a win is what you want. You want to start off on a win, and you want to continually, you know, progress and get better from there. And I thought we did that against Trinidad, and now, you know, tomorrow night against Panama, we have to up the ante again.
What do you take most away from that Trinidad and Tobago game, especially considering the late onslaught that you guys had? What does that show about your team?
I think it shows that we're really fit. Guys have been working really, really hard. We've all come in at different fitness levels. Guys from Europe having 2 to 3 weeks off and trying to get up to speed. We came in a little bit early with kind of an under 23 group, and then the guys from MLS have, you know, come in, and then they're in midseason form. So everybody's been on different pages, and it was a little bit difficult. And I think most people saw that against Jamaica and Venezuela, that things just weren't together. And gradually it's finally everybody's on the same page, and we're all very, very fit. And like I said, the fact that the last 15 minutes, it was just all one way, and scoring the goals that we did, I think just shows that we can wear teams down and finish teams off.
We've got Tim Ream with us, and I know we've only got a couple of minutes left with you because you've got to get on the bus and get ready for the game tomorrow night. And again, I'll remind everybody here tomorrow night, 5:30, the first game, and then the U.S. against Panama a little bit after that. Go to SeatGeek.com, check out the tickets, and make sure you get yourself here. The Greg Berhalter era, now you've had a taste of it a little bit. I'm sure you've been asked about that a ton before.
Sports Radio 810 WHB. Kansas City's exclusive home for Sporting Kansas City.
All right, our thanks to Tim Ream for joining us on the show from here at Children's Mercy Park. Napier Katie along with Carter Augustine, we had a little bit of a technical hiccup there. So I tell you what we're going to do, and Nathan, we're kind of doing this on the fly. Let's go ahead and step aside really quickly for another break so that we can line up our conversation with Benny Failhaber. He's getting ready to join us here in a minute. So let's take a really quick break. We'll talk to Benny Failhaber. Then after that, we have some press conference sound for you. Greg Berhalter and Tim Ream both spoke. We just had a chance to hear from Tim Ream, so let's maybe chop up some of that Greg Berhalter sound. We'll get that turned around for you so you can hear his thoughts. He talked about Kristen Pulisic. He talked about the matchup against Panama, and we'll have all of that for you. But first, let's go ahead and take a quick break because we can set Benny Failhaber up, and he will join us on the show next to talk U.S. Men's National Team and Sporting Kansas City right after this. Welcome back to a special edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's a busy week for soccer here in Kansas City. Between the Women's World Cup watch parties, between the Men in Blazers being in town, between the Gold Cup being here tomorrow night, and of course, Sporting Kansas City coming off their first road win of 2019 with another big road win, game coming up that will be a win on Saturday. Go ahead and get the confidence there, Carter. And we've got guests. We've got all kinds of stuff going on the show today. We are joined by the one and only Benny Failhaber right now, most famously known for the Benny Failhaber podcast. Tell us, actually,
no.
It's not the Benny Failhaber podcast.
That was the show, Benny Failhaber show, yeah. Right? And now it's the Benny, or it's called the BS the podcast.
Yeah. Benny and Sal.
Benny and Sal, yeah. Okay. So Benny Sal the podcast is the Twitter handle and all the other handles that you may find us on.
And of course, you play some soccer on the side, which we'll get to in a second. But most importantly, the podcast. You mentioned how people can find it, and you had a pretty, you have some access. To some players, and one of the starting defenders on the current U.S. men's national team is the guest on your latest podcast. Tell us about it a little bit.
Yeah, so we were – obviously I've been lucky enough to play with Walker Zimmerman last year at LAFC. He's doing really well with the national team now, was an all-star this year as well for the first time. So everything's going his way. So we wanted to talk to him and ask him how Gold Cup's been going, how the team's been doing. We asked him some pretty hard questions in our hashtag Ike's interrogation. Ike's been part of the show too now. So it's
listen anyway, though, folks.
So it's a lot of fun. We got me, Sal, Ike, and you know, Walker's was a good interview. So it's tune in if you want to hear some fun answers to some hard questions.
Okay, so I think it's kind of an interesting conversation right here. You were telling us about one of the hard questions he had, which was about club versus country. You know, I think his question was, would LAFC or the U.S. men's national team win if they played each other? I won't put you on the spot, Sporting KC versus USA, unless you want to wade into that conversation, but. You've played club, you've played country. How do club teams stack up to national teams on average?
Well, I think that club teams have the chemistry. That's the biggest thing. You know, a national team, this is as long as a national team will be together, you know, in a competition that's a month long and you have 4 weeks of training. And even so, you don't really have, you know, much of a preseason per se because you got games every week. And so it's really difficult with a national team to develop the same kind of chemistry and tactics and understanding for the players that you're playing with as you do at a club level. So I think the ceiling is much higher at a club level than internationally. And I think that's one of the big reasons why you see, you never watch an international game or an international team against a domestic club team, but it's difficult to see an international team play such a beautiful style as, you know, the best Barcelona teams, Real Madrid's, you know, Manchester United, all those teams at their best were unbelievable to watch.
Okay, so earlier today at Pinnacle, you guys were training and the U.S. men's national team was training. That's why the facility was built. This is kind of one of the first times we get a chance to really see that in action, where it's housing both Sporting Kansas City and the national team. And for you and Zeus and Bees and guys like that, this – there's still some familiar faces on the team. What was it like, you know, kind of having those guys around today?
Yeah, it's just good seeing old faces. Obviously, guys that we've played on the national team in years past and plenty of guys as well that we've played against within MLS and, you know, playing against each other. You know, Michael Bradley, Josie, you know, Walker, like I played with last year, Jossie. I mean, there's tons of MLS guys. Tyler Miller, who I played with last year as well. And so it's exciting to see those guys doing as well as they are, You know, the last game was really exciting because I thought they played more than just the win. It was the way they played. They looked hungry. They looked like they wanted to have fun, score goals, and you could tell that, you know, Trinidad were done, you know, towards the middle of the second half. They couldn't keep up. They couldn't, you know, do anything to stop us. And so it was exciting to watch the U.S. national team play as well as they did. And, you know, hopefully they can continue to build that, because that's the most important thing in these tournaments. You got to build the chemistry and just keep improving.
Yeah, they got Panama coming up, obviously, tomorrow. That's why we're all here and at Children's Mercy Park. I'm curious, obviously, you've got such a great U.S. background. Couple of nice anniversaries for you just coming up in terms of your USA career just the past couple of days. What have you made of Greg Berhalter and so far the two games in this tournament, and what are you expecting against Panama?
Well, I think with Greg, obviously it's the first few games of his tenure, you know, as coach, and I think the biggest thing that you take from him is what he's done in Columbus, and I think what he did there was nothing short of amazing. I mean, he took a team and build a foundation and a style of play that was very noticeable, something similar to what Peter did here, you know, 10 years ago, 10 plus years ago. And it was successful. You know, they didn't win a championship, but they got to the finals one year. They had a very impressive way of playing the game and possessing out of the back, bringing their outside backs way up the field to combine in the attack. And so those are all very difficult ideas to get going. And I mean, it seemed like they got it very quickly. And so that's a statement of his coaching ability. And so I think he's trying to do some similar things with the national team. I think it's a different system that he's trying to put in. I think it's a little bit similar to what, you know, the Man City formation and the way that, you know, the outside backs kind of come inside sometimes, act as the mids almost. But there's a lot of similar ideas. And like I said, it takes time. And so that'll be the test, you know, to see if it's one thing to do it at the club level, to input these more difficult ideas and more dynamic ideas onto a team at the club level where you have every day to train with them. It's another thing to bring them in once a week, once every month for maybe 3-4 days at a time and be able to be you know, a really good team. And so we'll see. I think he's got all the tools to be a very good coach, and I'm hoping that we continue to see that improvement.
Carter referenced a couple of those anniversaries. There was the Confederations Cup against Spain, that unforgettable win in South Africa. But to me, and we pulled up the video of it right when you walked in, the golazo against Mexico for you in the Gold Cup, and you said right away, 12 years ago yesterday. So do you celebrate that anniversary? Like, how did you remember that was the anniversary yesterday?
No, I know that date because, one, the Gold Cup goal, two, the win against Spain in Confederations Cup, and it's my mother-in-law's birthday. So June 24th, and it's only 2 days before my daughter's birthday. So it would have been funny if she fell on that day as well. But so I'm probably not going to forget that date too soon.
So you've been asked about that goal a whole bunch, but just in terms of the Gold Cup now, this one is particular. How significant was the competition in the years you played in it? And maybe is this one even more so because of what the U.S. has been through over the past couple of years?
I think it's a big Gold Cup. I think that, is it make or break in terms of winning? No, I don't think so. I think that especially with you see the age of the players that are on this team, and it's probably the youngest I've ever seen, you know, other than maybe last year when it was kind of a hiatus year almost.
So gap year.
Yeah, gap year. So I don't think it's a make or break in terms of winning, but it is, it's an exciting year because, you know, we didn't make the World Cup, so we haven't played something really competitively in a long time. And Gold Cup was always a lot of fun. I got to play in one in 2007. I played in one game in 2009, and I unfortunately missed 2011 because of injury. And so I do remember having a lot of fun in that tournament. And I think it's a tournament where a lot of young guys can kind of start showing themselves and feeling good about where they fit into the national team squad. And so I think that's what it's all about. And if we can use this to really, get that chemistry, understand the system, find one or two, three new players that can really, come in every time with the national team and be a difference maker, then I think it'll be a big a big tournament for us.
Of course, kind of a side piece of this Gold Cup being here at Children's Mercy Park, is Kansas City bidding for the next World Cup that'll be here in the U.S. You're yourself a World Cup veteran. What do you think it would be like to have it here in Kansas City? And could you describe maybe, you know, your thoughts on trying to get it here and what it could do for the city?
I mean, the World Cup's the biggest competition in the world, in all of sports, in my opinion. I think in terms of numbers, I think that would back that up. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Do you have the numbers there?
No, I don't have them on me, but you're right.
I believe it. I mean, the amount of people that watch the World Cup is something spectacular. And so I remember when it was in the U.S. in 94, I remember watching it. I remember how, you know, epic that was at the time. Obviously, playing it in 2010, it was, you know, it's hard to really describe or put into words what it really means to you as a player. But it's something really special. It's like, it's the pinnacle of the sport, you know? And so it's what you strive to be able to achieve. And, for it to be able to come back to the U.S. in 2026 and, hopefully to Kansas City, I think that is, that'll be great for these fans that are here, that are always coming to our games, that are, you know, avid football fans as well, that watch games outside of MLS in Europe, international soccer, and all that kind of stuff. And so I think it's going to be something pretty special and something that the city would thrive in.
So let's switch from country to club now. You guys got your first road win of the season in Columbus on Sunday. And you tell me, it seemed like the first half was a rough go on both sides. It didn't seem like either team really had their footing. But in the second half, you guys took advantage and won the game. What's the most important takeaway or the most important thing you guys accomplished in getting that win on Sunday?
Getting the win on Sunday.
Yeah.
That was my answer to your question. Yeah. No, getting the win on Sunday was the most important. I mean, look, that I've been in this league long enough to know that there's confidence is a ridiculously important factor in MLS. The best of teams can be low on confidence and become one of the worst of teams, and the worst of teams can be high on confidence and be one of the best of teams. And so you see, I mean, obviously I wasn't here last year, but Sporting Kansas City was right up there with Atlanta as the two best teams in the league, in my opinion. You know, I think the way they played, I think obviously in a purely results and standings, I think it showed as well. I don't want to take anything away from Red Bulls, but I just think that just aesthetically as well, you know, the way you watch the game and you enjoy the game, I think it was a joy to watch. And so and this year it hasn't been the same, you know, and the injuries obviously play a part, but then you lose some confidence and you are not the same team for whatever reason. You still have a lot of the same players, but you're not the same team. And so, and you conversely look at a team like San Jose, who started the season terribly. They were brutal to watch. And I think now they're one of the best teams to watch in MLS. They play a different style, but they've all bought into it. They're tough to break down, and they're confident going forward. And I think that makes all the difference. And so we need to win some games, whether it be 1-0 ugly game that we won in Columbus, whether it be, you know, a 4-3 game where we can't defend but we score four goals. We have to get 3 points one way or another, and then we'll start getting that confidence back, and hopefully we can start playing, you know, the way that we know how to.
You were credited, I believe, with a second assist on the goal. I was wondering where that ranks in terms of the assists in your career.
That I said this before the game ended, or no, sorry, I only found out that I got the double assist when Robo ran to me and told me that he was able to help me get that. And so I said that is easily the worst assist that I have ever gotten in my entire career. So to be fair, I said to him that was an undeserving, deserving assist, because there's been plenty of assists that I've been robbed of in the past. So
It all evens out. And that was one of those moments where it looked like it could have been you or Felipe. Was that just like you guys – you know, if only one of you is standing there, maybe one of you is putting it in the back of the net?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see Felipe because he was on my right side, so I'm assuming he saw me while he was running. But I saw Christian getting the ball. I know exactly what he's going to do with it. You know, I've seen this plenty of times where he kind of turns a little bit and is trying to find that slip pass, and I try to make a run into the box, and I felt like I was wide open. And so the ball's rolling, and I'm thinking I'm just going to, you know, punch this into the net. And then at the corner of my eye, I see a body coming from my right, which I assume is a defender coming to tackle. And so I rush the shot, miss the entire shot, realize it was Felipe, put my hands on my head, look at the ball. I'm like, oh, it's going out of bounds. Jerso's not getting to that. Put my heads back on my head, look again, and then the ball's in the air and Felipe heads it in. And then I think he's offside. And then I don't see the linesman pick it up or pick up the flag. And then I just sat there, like stood there for, I think, amidst all of that, I was exhausted as well. So then I just stood there, didn't know what to do. It was really funny looking back at the tape. Yeah, hopefully I don't have another one of those moments during the season.
Hey, in the stat sheet, it's an assist, right, Carter? I
mean, that's right. That's an assist. You guys mentioned kind of an ugly win, but it counts. I think one thing that stood out was the ability to hold on at the end of the game, 6 minutes of added time as well. What did you think about the overall defending and kind of the all hands on deck aspect?
Yeah, it's, I mean, if you look at it at just a standalone game and you don't take anything else into consideration, I think we would be disappointed in how we played because we were up a man for, what was it, 10, 15 minutes? I think at that point, we're a team that should feel confident enough to up a man, just play the ball around, probably get a few more chances to put the game away. That's not the case right now. You know, right now we have to fight tooth and nail to just get 3 points. And so to be able to see that, to see Boaty, you know, running around all over the place, clearing balls left and right, covering people, I think that's, you know, a testament as, you know, the kind of team that we are, that we want to try and get past this rough stretch. And I think we will. We have the quality, we have the players, and like we said, we have the right mindset to try and get out of this. And so whatever it takes right now, I think that's the MO that our team has to have. And, a few win here, win there, and then we'll start getting out of this rut.
Okay, finally, we'll wrap it up. You guys have one more road game at the end of this, what has been a 5-game road trip through the month of June, and it's in Real Salt Lake. There's been, you know, the history of you and Sporting and RSL. A lot of the names have changed and faces have changed, but you're back here. Bex is on the other side. Is it still a rivalry? Like, does it still get you going, like going ready to play Real Salt Lake?
I think it has died down, unfortunately. Yeah. I don't want to be the guy that, you know, brings it down, but I think it has a little bit. But having said that, I think it's still Salt Lake. It's still Kansas City. Like you said, it's good to be back here, and it's always fun to play against Salt Lake, especially there. The fans, I don't think they like me that much. I don't know why, but they don't like me that much. And so I'm sure I'll hear a few boos and hopefully we can get 3 points. But it should be a big game for us. Like you said, last game of the road trip, we've done well to get points in the first three of the league games that we've been on the road, and hopefully we can do the same in Salt Lake and then bring some of that positivity back to Children's Mercy, and I'm already looking forward to the game after that too. So
there you go.
LAFC on July 3rd.
Yeah, that'll be a big one for you as well. Well, Benny, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it. Good luck on Saturday in Salt Lake.
All right, thanks, Nate.
All right, that's Benny Failhaber. We'll be back with more of the Sporting Kansas City Show here from Children's Mercy Park, where the United States Men's National Team just wrapped up their news conference, and we'll have more coverage of the U.S. National Team as well right after this.
Back at Children's Mercy Park on the Sporting Kansas City Show, Nate Bucati along with Carter Augustine. It's been a fun day today already on the show. We had U.S. Men's National Team defender Tim Ream briefly. He was a part of the United States Men's National Team's news conference here at Children's Mercy Park. We had all the teams out here training today for a little bit, getting used to the field. Carter, earlier today, the U.S. Men's National Team and Sporting Kansas City were sharing the Pinnacle facility. That's the first time we really got a chance to see that in action. And from hearing from Tim Ream, his word was wow.
Yeah.
And hearing from Benny Failhaber, you could tell that he and some of the former U.S. Men's National Team players that are with Sporting were getting a kick out of it. And it seemed like the facility worked exactly the way it was designed in terms of both entities being able to use the space at the same time, and even some coaching clinics going on at the same time there.
Yeah, first test run really for the facility. And like you said, they had still a ton of coaches in there for their weekly coaches training, trying to get their licenses. And then Sporting kind of came in a little earlier than the U.S. did to use the pitches, but they kind of crossed paths in the hallways and whatnot. But yeah, it was cool to see that the USA team come in and their reaction to the facility. It's such a wonderful facility and a good first run for the U.S. men's national team, I think.
You are one of the biggest U.S. men's national team fans I know. You went to Brazil and watched the United States national team play there, right, in the World Cup five years ago.
Yep.
So I know that you hurt as much, if not more, and I was devastated by the game in Trinidad. And it's been tough. I remember even this past gap year. I keep calling it the gap year. I don't think there's a better term for it. That year of just, and we heard from Tim Ream about it.
He said the same thing.
Yeah, games don't matter. Yeah. There's no direction to the team. We're just kind of filling time. And I remember I was trying to get myself excited to watch some of those games. Hey, at least we get to watch some of the young guys. And you were telling me, time, I'm not interested. Until they start playing some things that matter again, you were kind of like, let's hire a coach and let's get a direction before I really want to watch this stuff.
That was my biggest frustration was it took a year to hire a coach. And so, you know, I'm watching Dave Sarakan coach some random guys in games that don't matter at all for a year. It was really tough.
No idea if we're going to play this style of play going forward.
Well, you figure you wouldn't. You know? You figure you wouldn't play that style of play because it really never seemed like he was a serious candidate for the job.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was really, really tough. It was a tough year, wasn't it, to get up for the U.S. men's national team. And
it felt like being a kid that didn't get picked for a team at recess.
Oh, yeah. It was tough to watch the World Cup as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it was still a blast. Obviously, the World Cup is such a wonderful sporting event that, yeah, I still got into it. But to see Panama there instead of us, that was really, really heartbreaking. And, yeah, it was like a kid that, you know, just had everything taken away from him, really.
Yeah.
It was a tough year. I was very frustrated with how long they took to name a coach. Once they named the Ernie Stewart as the technical director first, I figured he might take some time, but it seemed to just take forever to get someone back in there. And even the January camp this year was kind of like, all right, we'll see a little bit of Craig Berhalter and see what he's got, but it still didn't really have any excitement to it. And it's starting to get back there. They still got a ways to go, and I don't know about you, but I worry they've lost a lot of momentum, not only because of them not qualifying for the World Cup, but I just don't feel like they realize that they've lost some eyeballs and they've lost some interest.
I'm glad you brought up that point because that's exactly where I wanted to go with this. With this game coming here tomorrow night, this is, to me, a little bit of a litmus test as to are they finally starting to gain some traction and restoke some interest. Now, this is just anecdotal. I would tell people that you can still get tickets at a decent price if you go to SeatGeek right now. You can still get tickets at least the last time I checked, you can still get tickets at a decent price to the game tomorrow night.
The doubleheader as well.
Yeah, it's a doubleheader, and obviously we want to have the most raucous, amazing crowd, and I think it's going to be full when we get here. But if you're thinking about coming to this game, we're going to give a couple of tickets away here at the end of this segment, so keep listening. My son, our family, we bought tickets in the Bud Light Landing. We wanted to be able to sit with a bunch of my son's, his youth soccer team. So we bought the tickets there. We thought, well, you know what, doubleheader, chance to do the all-you-can-eat, type situation, take advantage of that. We got on board over a month ago with that, and I think we bought those tickets for like $70. Some of the other members of the soccer team didn't jump on it. And this week they were going for like over $200 per ticket. Now that's in a section where there's food and drink and other things, but the increase in the demand in just that span, and from what I understand, it really started to jack up after the Trinidad and Tobago game.
Nice.
I can just tell you that my arc in terms of interest has gone from after the friendly against Jamaica, I'm not going to freak out about this. A lot of the best players didn't play. Greg Berhalter changed the formation a little bit. It seemed like that was a tinkering game.
Yep.
To you, we're both NFL fans. To use the NFL model, to me, it was almost like the fourth preseason game where we're just trying some stuff and getting a look at guys.
There's an interesting Athletic article, actually, Paul Tenorio today posted with Greg Berhalter, and Berhalter pretty much said, I'm only taking positives from that loss against Jamaica, and that was a game for that purpose.
Yeah. So I didn't freak out.
Yeah.
But then the Venezuela game – still missing some guys. But that was, but this is the one. This is the one we're getting ramped up for real competition here, mm-hmm. and the team got trounced
completely and completely outplayed as well by a Venezuela side.
That's not that great. They're good.
But they're all right now in the Copa America, but they're typically not. They're not a side that should be playing off the pitch like they did
on your home field.
Yeah,
and so I was then all of a sudden like, man, what are we going to be seeing here? You know, with this Gold Cup, the game against Guyana. Kind of a slow start, but the team took care of business. To me, not too much to take away from that. I don't rate Guyana too much as a massive opponent, but the right result. And then Trinidad and Tobago. I actually thought the U.S. played really well even in the first half, but maybe just, you know, in the final third, they weren't getting the goals. And then in the second half, the way that they played, the way Christian Pulisic played in particular, got me excited. To the point where now I'm like, okay, now we're seeing some things, and now the competition's about to step up another notch with Panama. Still not a great team, but a legitimate, you know, World Cup now.
World Cup team.
Veteran team that's got a lot of professionals and MLS players on the roster. So I went from really worried to slowly getting more excited to now, and this competition, again, what we're talking about, I've been waiting for this team to play a game like this, the one we're going to see tomorrow night, for almost 2 years. So now I can't wait for this game tomorrow night and the rest of this competition, hoping that the United States makes a run. I'm hoping that the rest of the city and the rest of the United States men's national team is starting to feel the same way. I guess we'll find out tomorrow night.
Yeah, we'll find out. And I'm with you. It was an excitable performance against Trinidad, especially the last 30 minutes or so. Like you said, seeing Christian Pulisic do – like he was the man out there and the talisman, if you will, for this U.S. squad, and you envision that that's what he's going to be for the foreseeable future. I thought Weston McKennie was right up there with them as well, and those are two guys that you want to lean on, and I felt like they really did take the game by the scruff of the neck, and then you had a bunch of other guys chipping in with good performances as well. So, you want to temper your excitement a little bit because it is Trinidad, and they're not a very good team right now, but – that being said, you go into that, if you and you offer someone a 6-0, they're going to take it because the way that the U.S. played, it was an exciting it was an exciting game from them. And yeah, I'm excited for this game against Panama, too. Maybe some chance to exercise some demons as well against the team that kind of qualified over the U.S. the last time around.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. So, again, for me, it's not even so much, okay, now the team's rolling, and here we go. It's more, okay, now it's time to sit up and take notice.
Let's see.
Now let's see. There's something to build on here, and another big test tomorrow night in that ramping it up. And Benny Failhaber said it with us. This is the type of competition typically where you want to kind of start slow and then build up. Usually the qualifying through the group part is not the hardest part. Things get tougher when you get into the knockout rounds. And so this is kind of that, you know, part of that buildup. So let's hear from Greg Berhalter and a little more from Tim Ream, who was at the news conference a little while ago. And one of the things that Greg Berhalter was asked about was shifting the armband around, the captain's band. For so long, it's been Michael Bradley's team. Yeah. And there's a little bit of a changing of the guard there.
Daniel Sperry asked it. That was a good question, our beat writer for Sporting on MLS Soccer.
And he does a really good job, and it was a good question. And here's Greg Berhalter. And you'll also hear Tim Ream, who's had a chance to wear that band a time or two under Berhalter as well, talking about that that captain's band.
I think that, you know, when I look at the group, we see a nice diversity of leadership in the group. And we want to take advantage of that. I don't think we're at the stage yet where we're saying, okay, this, you know, this is the person that's going to lead us for the next 4 years. You know, I like the group. I think the group is extremely close. And it's nice to enable other people to be leaders and step up in the leadership capacity.
Yeah, I think that was the biggest question or, you know, conversation that Greg and I had, is that there's so many guys on this team that have different styles and different ways of leading, and we feel that as a group, it's not just one person, it's not just, you know, the four or five guys that have held the armband. It's, you know, it's a collective, and we all need to kind of chip in and lead each other. And I think that's the biggest thing and the reasoning for you know, so many guys getting the armband.
We'll find out tomorrow night.
Yeah, seems like Tim Ream was kind of bought into the thinking there of Greg Berhalter, and I don't want to think it or read too much into it, but does that mean, you know, maybe they're not planning on Michael Bradley being around for the next World Cup qualifying cycle? That's kind of how I read into it. Or maybe he has to audition for the new coach.
Well, maybe he still is on the team, but he's in a different role. And it was interesting. I had a chance to talk with Tony Meola. I can't get my world-class goalkeepers straight. There's so many of them. But Tony Meola was in studio with me on the morning show today, and he said, look, this is Christian Pulisic's team going forward. For the next 10 years and maybe more, this is his team, and he's got to take this team by the scruff of the neck, in the words that you used. And he looked like he was up for it, and he looked like he had that edge. He hasn't really – he's been a reluctant person in that regard. He hasn't wanted to make that his ownership. And I'm not saying that means he's going to be the captain going forward, but maybe there's a changing the guard. And even if Michael Bradley's here, and I do think, I will say this, for all the polarizing nature of Michael Bradley up until this point, they look a lot better with him on the field right now than without him.
I've never understood the Michael Bradley haters. I really haven't. And he gets more slack than anyone for the loss down in Trinidad, and perhaps so because he was wearing the captain's armband. But this is one of the best players in the U.S.'s history, and I've never understood the hatred towards Michael Bradley. He's a fantastic player, and like you said, they're better with him on the pitch, and he still has qualities.
Yeah, I mean, you see Tyler Adams, maybe Paxton Pomacall, and some players like that. That, who knows? 3 years is a long time.
It is.
It's a really
some guys
long time.
We haven't heard of maybe coming into the fold.
But I think it says more just about the fact that this is a chance for Berhalter to find out what he's got, and I think he wants to see what guys are made of and what they'll show in those situations. Now, another question that they were both asked today was about possibly getting overshadowed by the women's national team. The Women's World Cup's going on at the same time, and I've heard some complaints on the women's side. Why in the world is there a big, massive competition going on the men's side at the exact same time to maybe take attention away from the Women's World Cup? But here in the United States, that's not happening, right? I mean, the Women's World Cup is front and center.
Certainly. I think the worst part, though, is isn't the Gold Cup final the same day as the World Cup final?
Yes.
And I think that's a joke. Yeah. I really do. There's And CONCACAF has come out and with these weak excuses for why it has to be that way.
I haven't looked at the time. Is it the same time?
I wouldn't imagine so.
Gosh, you better not.
I wouldn't imagine so, just because of the time zone difference. But that just doesn't make any sense for me. For me, like security reasons or whatever, it's pretty. That's nonsense to me. I think they could shift it by a day or two. But you're right. So far. The women have had no chance or no problems attracting a large audience here in the U.S. And actually, I don't know if you saw the numbers across the world as well. Mm-hmm. England's got their biggest numbers, and Brazil in their knockout game, upwards of 30-something million people watched the Brazil game in the knockouts. So it's getting better and better, which is really cool to see.
And I think our watch parties have been getting better and better down in the Power and Light District too, and I expect to see a fantastic
Friday.
One on Friday.
Friday's going to be nuts,
It's got to be off the hook.
Yeah.
Hopefully we see you down there, 2 o'clock. It's going to be
a great game too, USA-France.
Should be the final, right? I mean, most people feel like that should be the final, but it's in the quarterfinal, but it's a Friday. Start your weekend early. Come down there. We'll have prizes. We'll have fun. We'll wear your red, white, and blue, and join us on Friday, and let's turn out in Kansas City. I think it's going to be great. Like you said, it should be, first of all, a great atmosphere, and most importantly, a terrific game, a tough one for the U.S. Women's National Team. Here's Greg Berhalter and Tim Ream on their perception of the Women's National Team and the way that they're cruising right now.
I think it's great. We've been following the women. We're so proud of what they're doing. We're really happy that the whole country is tied into their trip and to their quest for the World Championship. And I think that when you look at the World Cup being played and the Gold Cup being played at the same time, I think all it does is bring more attention to soccer, and we think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, like Greg said, we've been watching every game, paying close attention, and they have our full support, and whether it's their games on TV or our games are on late in the evenings, it's only going to be good for the sport in the country, and the more games on TV, the better.
So, of course, again, we'll remind you, 2 o'clock on Friday, U.S. Women's National Team against France. These are the top two ranked teams in the women in the Women's World Cup going toe-to-toe in the quarterfinals. And so it's going to be an epic game and an epic watch party down in the Power and Light District on Friday. Tomorrow night, United States Men's National Team against Panama here at Children's Mercy Park. Go to SeatGeek to get your tickets for that one. And Tim Ream joined us earlier at the press conference, was asked about this influx of young players we've talked about, Carter, and it's not just Christian Pulisic. You're seeing Nick Lima. I'm off the top of my head, we're seeing Tyler Boyd for the first time out there. Some other young players getting some opportunities. And Tim Ream was asked about the way those guys are blending into the senior men's national team now.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about the difference in generations and the young guys coming in, but the way they've handled themselves, the way they train every day, the way they carry themselves off the field. Is incredible. You wouldn't know that a lot of, you know, some of these guys, it's their first Gold Cup, their first major competition, and I think that's a credit to their development as players and the people around them to develop them as people and as good human beings. And I think it just adds to our philosophy of being a collective. We're not having to drag guys along and get them in line. It's nice to see, and the talent is obviously there for everyone to see for themselves. But they've, like I said, they've handled themselves well on and off the field, and it's a really close group, and long may it continue.
And for me, Carter, if I'm looking for a reason to be optimistic about the future of United States soccer, I think that part of the reason that those guys have been able to step in so much is because they are full-fledged pros that are playing significant minutes for their clubs. And I hope that the days of, oh, we got a young kid who's in a system in Europe, so let's go ahead and put him on the men's national team, are gone by the wayside. I know all the hand-wringing about Josh Sargent not making the senior men's national team for this competition. He hasn't really done anything yet. You look at guys like McKinney and Adams and Pulisic and even Lima at the MLS level. These guys are playing significant minutes professionally, and I think that makes them more equipped to step into a situation like this.
Yeah, and I think you heard from Tim Ream there, and Greg Berhalter has said it as well, hasn't said this, but kind of it's alluded to this, is you don't just hand the shirt over to the young players, and I know that we're in a period of transition. Like, they have to earn it still, and
yes,
they have to take it off the older players ahead of them, and some of these guys are doing it already.
Let's hear one more soundbite from Greg Berhalter, and this is the one that everybody wants to hear about right now, and it actually came from an English journalist who was here, because everybody in England wants to know about one guy with the U.S. men's national team, and that's Christian Pulisic. After the record transfer to Chelsea, they want to know what they're getting in the English Premier League, and so Greg Berhalter was asked, how good can this kid be? How good is he already?
I think he's the most expensive American player ever, right? Not only English team. What we've seen with Christian is just, a tremendous dynamic with the ball. When he gets the ball, he can, he can accelerate easily by players. And then once he does that, he forces defenders into 2v1 situations. He forces them to make decisions. And then it opens up the game for him and for the rest of the team. What I really like about Christian, and this is a short period of working with him, is that his ability to take information in and act on information. We want to set up his role that he has freedom to influence the game in different positions, whether that's central or in wide positions. But, we've been working hard with him on the defensive aspect, and he's done a great job. If you look at last game, the defensive shape, the defensive organization was at a really high level. Denying central passes, making it difficult for the opponent, pressing when appropriate. And that's what I'm most pleased with, that, in a short period of time, he's able to take on information and act on it. And because of that, I think, with the coaching he'll get in Chelsea and in England, I think he has got a bright future.
Maybe the thing that I appreciate the most about Greg Berhalter right now is listening to that answer. You could tell he knows he's got a special player on his hands, and he has a specific idea of how he wants to allow that player to flourish and really affect the game in the biggest way possible.
Yep, a special player, maybe a down year for him at Dortmund and big expectations on him at Chelsea, but we saw those glimpses against Trinidad, and just hearing from Berhalter there and the defensive aspect, that play late on in the game where he tracked back, won the ball back, winds up nutmegging Jovan Jones, going past another player and sprinting forward, is, you know, that's just breathtaking stuff. And hopefully he continues his upward trajectory.
Hopefully we get a chance to watch some of that special play tomorrow night here at Children's Mercy Park. Let's give away two tickets at the end of the show here to caller number 10.
Caller number 10. And go to both games, by the way, because Guyana, Trinidad, it might be a dead rubber in terms of the group, but these are two Caribbean rivals, and I think it's going to be a good game, actually.
It should be a lot of fun. We'll see everybody here tomorrow night at Children's Mercy Park. Our thanks to Tim Ream, Benny Failhopper for joining us. Thanks to Beards for running the show today. For Carter Augustine, this is Nate Bucchetti saying so long on the Sporting Kansas City Show.